This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com.
Welcome to the briefing room with me, David Aronovich. You, me, top experts, 28 minutes, and a big issue of the day. Let's go. And this week, as the Taliban take control of Afghanistan, we look at where the American withdrawal that precipitated the collapse fitted into Joe Biden's foreign policy. The President of the United States did not foresee the sudden collapse of the Afghan government last week, but he was clear that if it were a consequence of American withdrawal, then so be it. That this represented a break with American foreign policy pre-Donald Trump is obvious. So this week, I want to know just how the withdrawal fits into Joe Biden's wider strategy for American involvement in the world. What is the Biden plan, and how has the Afghan debacle affected it? Step into the briefing room, and together we'll find out. Before we look at the grand picture of the world according to Biden, I wanted to understand what the president's calculation actually was when it came to withdrawing troops from Afghanistan. Alex Ward is national security reporter at the news organisation Politico, based in Washington, D.C. Alex Ward, as far as you can tell, what was Joe Biden's calculation when it came to the timetable for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan and what would happen?
In his mind, first, he just felt that withdrawal was necessary. It's something he wanted to do when he was vice president, and it's something he now did as president. He initially said the date for the full withdrawal would be September 11th, which, of course, would be a nice symbolic move for the United States because that is the 20th anniversary of the attacks. But the withdrawal was actually going much faster than I think even the Pentagon itself thought it would. And so that was revised to August 31st. And it was believed that Afghanistan would not fall for at least 6 months, if not more, as the U.S. withdrew. So the scenes that we're seeing right now wouldn't be happening as American soldiers were headed home. But of course, it happened even before the August 31st deadline, and the Taliban took over the country in just over a week. So Biden did not expect this. He has said as much. He admitted it. Everyone else in the administration admits it. But that doesn't stop them from still saying this was the right decision at the end of the day.
Now, should we be surprised about Biden's determination to take American troops out and to stick to that withdrawal timetable? In fact, even to, as you say, make it faster?
Not particularly. He was a lone voice during the Obama years as someone who pushed for counterterrorism, not a counterinsurgency mission, meaning that he just felt American troops should just target al-Qaeda and terrorists and not try to effectively build a nation state in Afghanistan, one that is more Western in style than the government it had. So it is unsurprising that as president, given the opportunity, and especially one presented to him by his predecessor after former President Trump struck a deal with the Taliban, that Biden took advantage of the situation, that he went, you know what, no one can convince me that an extra year or five or more of America's military involvement in Afghanistan would mean that we would see success after 20 years of war. And so he withdrew, even with the scenes that we're witnessing right now in Kabul.
So in a way, Donald Trump did Joe Biden a favor.
Absolutely. And I don't think anyone in the administration, if you gave him enough drinks, would say no to that. President Trump made a deal that many in Washington did not want him to make. And it was one that placed conditions on the Taliban, saying the U.S. would leave by May 2021 as long as the Taliban did not kill Americans and a bunch of other conditions. It should be said that that administration ignored a lot of those conditions. And it was clear towards the end of Trump's time in office that he just wanted out of Afghanistan. But Biden knew he had that in his back pocket. He knew that that May 1st deadline was coming, and that the Taliban said that they would attack American troops if they stayed beyond that deadline without noting that they would be withdrawing. So Biden said, look, that was a deal made by the U.S. government with the Taliban. It was a deal that frankly fell in line with his own views. And so he made the decision before that deadline to finally end America's involvement in that 20-year war.
So you've been absolutely clear that we should not have been surprised by what has happened, even if we might be surprised by the speed of it. So there's been a debate in the Houses of Parliament this week, and it's pretty clear that here in Britain, at least, we are surprised. How do you account for that?
Clearly, they weren't paying attention to Joe Biden. And maybe there was a sense of security after the 4 years of Trump bad-mouthing allies and NATO and alliances in general, that Biden kept saying America is back, that we care about our alliances, that human rights is at the center of our foreign policy. And in fact, Biden reiterated both of those points in a recent speech in which he was defending his withdrawal decision. So my assumption is, and also talking to some European officials, what seems to be is that they just felt that Biden wouldn't do this without strict consultation with allies, without, you know, total buy-in from countries in the alliance who also spent money and lost people in that war. And instead, it was basically a unilateral decision. And now there are questions, I'm sure, in Europe that are going, maybe Trump wasn't an anomaly. Maybe there really is a withdrawal streak in the United States right now. And that maybe Biden, despite all of his rhetoric and all of his sweet talk, does not necessarily care about the U.S. and European alliance moving forward and without breaks in between.
Do you think the Biden administration calculated that that might be how his allies and friends would react?
I assume so. But every time you hear Biden speak, every time you hear an administration official speak, all they will say is, look, we expected there to be a collapse in Afghanistan. We expected some of our friends would be upset. We expected there to be, frankly, chaos and devastation and hurt. But that none of that is still convincing enough for Biden to prolong the war. In his mind, that war does not serve the national interests of the United States. And so while all of these things are important, in his mind, leaving the war was the most important thing overall. And so my guess is, and also talking to some Biden officials, you know, there's always been some animosity between the United States and European allies. There's always been some consternation, especially on issues of war and peace. But they're going to believe that at the end of the day, allies will come back and will still work with the United States on climate change and on countering China and on technology. And so this will not lead to a break in the transatlantic alliance. And so therefore, they had the space necessary to, if you will, pull the trigger.
Alex Ward. So something has changed in the White House foreign policy assumptions that, with the exception of the Trump presidency, we've become used to. Just what is the Biden foreign policy? And how may the fall of Afghanistan to the Taliban affect it? Joining me in the briefing room are Dr. Leslie Vinjamuri, Director of the US and Americas Program at Chatham House, Madia Afzal, a David M. Rubenstein Fellow in the Foreign Policy Program at Brookings Institution, and Professor Michael Clark, former Director General of RUSI, a defence and security think tank, and currently Visiting Professor of Defence Studies at King's College London. I want to ask about the bigger picture of American foreign policy and then fit Afghanistan into it a little bit later. And I suppose the first major question is about the principles of the Joe Biden foreign policy. Are they a new set of principles or are they broadly in continuity with previous ones? Madia Afzal.
You know, when Joe Biden came into office, he promised a return in some ways to the past, you know, that Trump had been an aberration and that with Joe Biden, America would be back, you know, America would renew American leadership and so on. But I think in the first major foreign policy test of his presidency, I would say that's Afghanistan, Joe Biden has shown a departure from the past. And that really stems from not taking actually the advice of his military leaders, the Pentagon, who asked him to continue on in Afghanistan for a little bit longer. And he has actually gone on a different path, one that the Biden administration argues is popular with the US public, but one which certainly wasn't popular with key elements of sort of the foreign policy establishment, if you will, in Washington. And now he's had to sort of bear the results of the fallout of that.
Leslie Vinjamuri.
Well, the Biden administration has made it very clear that they intend to pursue a foreign policy that is for the middle class at home to get back to what it considers the basics of national interest and also to renegotiate a lot of America's engagements in the global economy, to do this in collaboration and in close coordination with America's partners and allies. And that isn't just simply because the Biden administration wants to be nice. It's because it sees that as absolutely critical to agree collectively and then to implement collectively. And I think this is where certainly across Europe the feeling is right now that that has not been delivered on.
And we'll come to more of that in a moment. Michael Clark, looking at those broad principles, how do you see it?
I think what Biden represents really is a continuity of American thinking, which is that America is still going to play a major role in the world. There's no question about that. America will have a big effect in any region on any issue in which it takes an interest. But it wants to play that role in a different way because compared to 20 years ago, it now has a major competitor in China and to a lesser extent in a more resurgent Russia in some respects. And world politics now move on different lines because it's the era of globalization. It's the era of cyber power, of information wars. And so I think the Biden administration understands that although America is still the superpower in the world, it is a different world to 20 years ago, and it's going to have to express that power differently. So getting the Afghanistan problem out of the way, you can see what he was thinking about, that was sensible, but he now needs to rise above the hit which that has administered to his reputation in order to get on with all of these other things, which he thinks are clearly in America's 21st century interests.
Let's talk about what, in concrete terms, that means the Biden administration will be seeking to do, the priorities. Leslie Vinjamuri.
Well, clearly, climate change is right at the top. So I would put the foreign policy objectives perhaps in two buckets. One would be, how can America work with its partners to contribute to the big global public challenges where American leadership is necessary, but very far from sufficient. If we listen to John Kerry, the special envoy on climate, former U.S. Secretary of State, he states very clearly that America must lead on this, but without China, the game is over. So I think that the Biden administration has made it very clear that it wants to lead on what is basically a fundamental existential threat to all of humanity. But then the second bucket is, of course, the big geopolitical challenges. And right at the top of that list is China. So it's deterrence. It's deterring China's assertiveness in the South China Seas. It's a deterrence game with respect to Taiwan. It's a game of competition on questions of the economy, on standards, on infusing liberal values into the future uses of technology, on getting ahead in that game and shaping standards. And it's also competing, and this is the Build Back Better World idea, it's competing to provide alternatives for investment in infrastructure far beyond the West, across the global South. But I think those really are absolutely essential priorities.
Michael Clark, when you zero in on the priorities, what do you understand them as being?
I think what the Biden administration is trying to do is create with China, which is its major issue for, as it was with President Trump, it is to create what I would call containment plus, but it's a very big plus. I mean, it's rather like Cold War containment, which is to say, look, we will oppose you where we think we have to. We'll establish our red lines and we will show that we mean it, but we will try to cooperate where we can. Now, that was comparatively easy during the Cold War with Russia because there wasn't much relationship really between the two sides. It's a real containment plus these days because what we used to say about the Cold War, that the United States and Russia are adversaries and partners, well, and how is that the case here? Because, as Leslie said, I mean, they are clearly adversaries. They do have differing geopolitical objectives. But my goodness, they're partners when it comes to keeping the world economy moving, doing something about climate change, working on lots of common interests. And the United States is trying to explore what that relationship might feel like. President Trump had a very black and white view of it. President Biden's trying to look at the same problem with a much more subtle lens. And out of that, if he gets it right, then lots of other things will move more smoothly in the Gulf, in the Middle East, in relation to development in Africa. But if he gets it wrong, then the playing field will be every geopolitical area on the globe, and the United States will find itself, as it were, playing against China on every playing field that there is. That's one of the things that I think he wants to avoid.
And the same question about priorities to you, Madia Afzal.
Sure. I mean, I think both Leslie and Michael have covered it nicely. The one thing I would add here is that for Biden, essentially a stronger America at home will meet the China challenge sort of more effectively. So his priority is very much a domestic one, especially as the Biden administration seeks to come out of this pandemic. It wants to renew America domestically to meet the China challenge internationally. I think Biden has been more confrontational with China than many expected. You know, he's talked a lot, of course, about human rights and democracy. He's convening a democracy summit. So his approach is also to take an ideological stance against China and basically say, look, you know, the world stands on the side of the US, sort of the side of these ideologies that the US upholds of human rights, democracy, and so on. And that is the principle in some ways underlying the confrontational approach.
Leslie Vindramuri, let's just talk a moment about Russia and American policy towards Russia. Do you understand that as having taken a new twist under Joe Biden?
Oh, absolutely. If the baseline is Donald Trump, well, certainly. And it's this two-prong approach that Joe Biden wishes to pursue. And that is, you know, you've got to cooperate with Russia to move forward arms control talks, to talk about climate, to talk about the Arctic. And this is an interesting and potentially to try and drive a bit of a wedge between Russia and China. At the same time, I think very clearly taking a tough line to deter Russia's aggression, both territorially and with respect to cyber attacks, that whole gray zone. The question, I think, is, as with all of these things, whether the administration can pull it off without getting bogged down in things like Afghanistan, which is kind of where the locus of attention has necessarily been this week, devastatingly so for many people.
I can't help remembering that 20 years ago, the Bush administration also didn't want to get bogged down in the Middle East, and the Middle East obviously came to America. One of the things I'm struck by, what all three of you are saying, is that there's no reference whatsoever to an Islamist threat or to problems within the Middle East. Are we right in saying that the Middle East is in every way and its consequent policies on the back burner? Leslie?
I think it's impossible. So many American presidents have wanted the Middle East to be on the back burner. And every single time for the last four presidents, it's simply not been possible. So I think the trick for the Biden administration is, you know, how can it put the Middle East on the back burner? This is part of the motivation, certainly, for exiting Afghanistan. The irony, of course, the sad tragedy earlier this week was that we've seen and we will continue to see that at least in the short term, Afghanistan is going to pull America right back into the Middle East. As we know, there is an ongoing deep concern and consideration and investment in thinking through what to do on the question of Iran and the nuclear threat there. That will continue to be a mainstay of U.S. foreign policy, and deterring Iran's more generally is critical. So the Middle East will always be there necessarily. The question is whether it's managed well. And I think that, you know, the United States now will see the number one concern as being ensuring that its capability and its capacity to deter a terrorist attack remains strong. And the intelligence community, the U.S. foreign policy establishment, is divided on how this recent exit from Afghanistan will implicate that.
Well, Michael Clark, let's take that one on directly now. How the events in Afghanistan will influence how the rest of the foreign policy may play out. From the point of view of America's allies, this just looks like, let's not mince words, a first-class screw-up, doesn't it? How do you think it impacts?
Yes, I mean, badly at the moment, because, as we said before, I mean, the Biden administration said it would discuss, and there was one step forward from the Trump administration. It did inform its allies and talk to them, but it was clearly not negotiating with its allies. It was only telling them what it was going to do in advance. And the allies were, some of them were, thought that it was the right thing to do, but it would be managed better. In Britain, there was a sense that this was the wrong thing to do. We always thought that. Probably we didn't say it clearly enough, but it probably wouldn't have made a lot of difference if we did. And that sense that this makes the United States a less credible leader of NATO. But ironically, of course, it shows that the Europeans are certainly not going to do anything independently. The British trumpet the fact that they tried to explore the idea of an independent European presence staying in Afghanistan for longer. That was never a sensible runner, really, for all sorts of reasons. But the fact is that the British thought about it. There was no take-up from it in Europe. So we're back in this situation where as well, the Europeans can't do enough by themselves, so they look to America for leadership. But America's leadership has lost a lot of credibility, certainly in the short term, over Afghanistan.
Mahdi Afzal, on that credibility point, we made a programme in this series on Taiwan not very long ago. Just this week, Global Times, China's national English language newspaper, obviously state-run, has run an editorial saying, and I quote, "From what's happened in Afghanistan, those in Taiwan should perceive that once a war breaks out in the Straits, the island's defence will collapse in hours and the US military won't come to help." Is this the way, do you think, the Chinese are perceiving the lessons of Afghanistan?
I would say, you know, thinking about Taiwan, thinking about other areas, I mean, what is clear is that Joe Biden does not have any desire for military interventions that go beyond a very narrow scope. You know, he's not going to do counterinsurgency. He'll do counterterrorism. He's not going to intervene militarily in a place where then he's left with the task of nation building, because that, you know, in Afghanistan, once you entered Afghanistan, you were almost by definition going to have to nation build. So he's going to be very careful about American interventions going ahead. And I think that's what sort of this whole week has made clear.
Michael Clark, if you're in Taiwan now, should you be worried?
For sure. I mean, I'd be worried in Taiwan in any case, because China has made it pretty clear and Xi Jinping has made it pretty clear that he intends to solve, as he puts it, the Chinese-Taiwan problem while he is in power. And we don't know how long that will be, but let's guess 10 to 15 more years. And if they can't solve it, i.e. absorbed Taiwan peacefully, then there's a very good chance that they'll go towards a forceful solution. And I think that President Xi Jinping will be looking for opportunities to move down that road of forceful unification. So if I had to guess, I would say that it's not the case that China is likely to attack Taiwan, but what we used to regard as a sort of a 5% possibility of an attack on Taiwan now becomes something quite close to a 20 or 25% possibility, or even a 30% possibility. They're very mature about it. They've lived through all this before, but they're pretty worried about the trend of the next 5 to 8 years. They know that they are in some danger and that the tension will much more likely rise than fall.
Leslie Vinger-Murray, in many ways, the events crystallises what a lot of people have been thinking might be happening in American foreign policy for some time. But the mood, as expressed, let's say, in the parliamentary debate in the UK this week, was one of shock, genuine shock, not just at what America done, but actually at the tone of President Biden's response. It was very much there in the parliamentary debate. Are parliamentarians right in thinking that this might emerge from actually a different political viewpoint about foreign policy, which has spread in the United States amongst voters themselves?
There's no doubt that President Biden's speech, delivered to the American people, heard by the world, but delivered, remember, to the American people, took a very strong line. It really gave very little credence or concern to the broader humanitarian question, which is so many people feel so deeply over the past several days, including many people in America. But this is a president who has wanted and needed in his mind to communicate very clearly to the American people his deep belief that it is the wrong thing to do to put boys and girls, men and women, at risk in a conflict where, in his view, the United States simply has no vital interests at stake. This is a deeply motivating principle for him. I think he feels it. I think he's felt it for a very long time. We know that he opposed sending more troops in back in 2009. He's been consistent. His view is not consistent with the broader foreign policy establishment in the United States, which has been divided on the question of exit. But he personally has been deeply committed to this view. So I think a lot of it is actually about Joe Biden.
Michael Clark, finally, and it's a question I'm going to put to all three of you. In effect, are there more similarities between Biden's approach to foreign policy with Donald Trump than we have liked to allow, Michael?
Yes, I suspect that there are. I mean, President Trump was not a complete antithesis of American policy. It was a spike his presidency in a longer-term trend where the United States is rethinking its relationship to world power in the 21st century. It will still be powerful. It will still defend its allies, but it will do it in different ways. And I think the President Biden, this may go down as a big misstep, and it's a misstep in intelligence and management and handling. But the direction in which he wanted to take America, which is to end the forever wars, get out of them now early while you still can, and concentrate on bigger picture. That bigger picture is just a more subtle version of the bigger picture that Donald Trump had. And I think that what we'll see in President Biden, it's no good the allies thinking that, oh, the Trump era is over. The Trump era has passed in that sense. But the era of America rethinking its way in the world, that's still with us and will be with us for some considerable time.
My dear Afzal, what do you think?
I think, you know, some might argue that America first and then thinking about American foreign policy for the middle class is the latter, just another way of saying the former. I think President Biden's administration would bristle at the comparison with Trump. But that being said, certainly in this case, the Biden administration's approach has been, going back to your question at the beginning, more of a departure from what the foreign policy establishment said than even Trump. Trump was talked into staying in Afghanistan multiple times, including last fall when he insisted that he wanted out by December. So Trump hewed more closely to the line, was talked into things more actually than Joe Biden is, because of the fact that, you know, Biden is very confident in his approach, having had these decades of experience on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and as vice president. I would still take a step back and say, on a larger kind of scale, you know, Trump had a very impulsive foreign policy. Biden's foreign policy in general, beyond Afghanistan, is much more thought out, much more deliberate, much more sort of methodical, procedurally, you know, follows the way things have been done in the past. And so I will say that in that sense, it will not be a continuity.
Last word to you, Leslie Vinjamuri.
First on Afghanistan and then on foreign policy more generally. I think on Afghanistan, we have to continue to remind ourselves that Joe Biden inherited a deal. He didn't start with a clean slate. And so I think it's a difficult comparison to draw. The question might be, what would he have done if he had the situation that Donald Trump had inherited? But I think on this question of, you know, foreign policy more generally, sure, America has been renegotiating its role in the world or trying to do so since at least 2008 and 2009, when President Obama came into office. At that general level, all three presidents bear a certain kind of similarity. But I think that the number one area where there's just a fundamental difference, which has potentially gravely positive consequences for humanity, is that Joe Biden is deeply committed to the number one challenge of our time, solving it, which is climate change. And there's simply no comparison between Donald Trump and his administration and what he did to science and anti-science and disinformation around that fundamental problem for all of us and what Joe Biden is trying to do. So I think that, you know, just on that one dimension, they're just radically different. But more generally, I think that, the you know, the devil is in the detail when it comes to executing on foreign policy and implementing. And in that dimension, I agree very much that there are more differences than there are similarities.
Leslie Vinjamuri there with Michael Clark and Madia Afzal. And my thanks to them and to Alex Ward, and we'll be back at the same time next week. You've been listening to The Briefing Room with me, David Aronovich. The producers were Ben Carter, Kirstine Knight and Sharon Hemans. The sound was mixed by Graham Puddifoot and the editor is Penny Murphy. And if you enjoyed this podcast, you might like other editions of The Briefing Room, which are all available on BBC Sounds. Recently, we've asked who's supporting the Taliban, how much will COP26 help tackle climate change, and could tensions over Taiwan and who it belongs to lead to war?